Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Thank you. Oh, boy. Sing it, birthday boy.
This Johnny B. Okay, all right.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
How old are we today?
As Bob Hope said, you're at the age where the candles cost more than the cake.
No, are you 52 or 53?
I don't know. I talk to my biographer. How old are you?
I don't know.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I may be something. I may be double nickels. I may be playing with a full deck. I'm not sure. I'm somewhere in between 50 and 60.
Uh-huh.
Because trust me, Justin and Quinn, it'll happen to you. Once you turn 50, you don't really, you know. But we did have your roast.
I'm closer to 50 than I am to 60. And I don't know if everybody in the room can say that.
Stop it. Okay.
All right. So,
well, happy birthday. And we're glad you're in studio today and tomorrow.
Yes, thank you.
I have something for you.
Yeah, I'm in studio because
your mailbox was breaking.
Whistled back to the state for,
That's for you. Happy
lawfare
birthday.
On a small scale. I'm in town to celebrate my birthday by having to appear before State Board of Elections. To appear at a State Board of Elections hearing because of the lawfare practiced by Jelly Belly in this state. Yeah, I wonder why anybody would want to leave, but I digress. Maybe that's a conversation for later.
Yes, I would like to talk about that later.
No. So what we talk about now, one of the things that... if you listen to the show, is a theme that we try to imprint upon people's minds is different names, same policies, same results in big city America, but also sort of urban metropolitan areas across the country. And, every weekend you get a collection of stories that drive this point home. And I thought with the occasion of Luis Huesca's mom speaking, she was at the FOP Lodge talking about the loss of her son, of course, Chicago police officer Luis Huesca. I thought it was a good time to revisit what is termed here by the willfully blind, the addicts of beautiful lies. Big city living. Edith Huesca on her son.
I feel frustrated because I cannot do nothing, just waiting for the authorities to make the justice.
The only thing I want is justice for my son.
Yeah, hoping for justice. And of course, as everybody's by now seen, there's been an arrest warrant issued for the suspect in Officer Huesca's murder.
His name's Xavier Tate Jr. He's from Aurora. But according to court records, on March 6th, he had a misdemeanor charge of criminal trespass in Olympia Fields. So he was supposed to be in court for that charge last Wednesday, and obviously he didn't show up for that appearance. But why can't we catch a cop killer? Obviously people know who he is. I mean, there's surveillance video of him out everywhere, and I don't know what's taking so long.
Big city living. So big city living illustrated by the murder of police officers in Chicago over the last few years. Big city living, as evidenced by the attitude of D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. Washington, D.C. last year was one of the few metropolitan areas that saw a spike in violent crime on top of the spikes that all of these big cities saw in violent crime during COVID. And here is how she responded to a question about whether she would meet with a resident of D.C. named John Evans, who has had three of his sons murdered on the streets of D.C.
Oh, my God.
I don't talk about my discussions with families.
But and respectfully, I'm not asking you to divulge in any conversations, but do you plan to meet them at all?
No.
Can I ask why?
I've answered your question. Any other questions?
John Evans tells us he is disappointed in that answer. Now, he has heard from someone with the Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. Evans' 14-year-old son, Avion, was killed on April 4th, nearly 8 years after his older son was stabbed at the Deanwood Metro Station in 2016. The Evans family went through another loss last May when another son was shot on M Street.
No, I've answered your question.
Next question. Any other questions? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Big city living.
She can't be bothered, Dan.
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Ooh.
You don't think of that as a necessarily a hotbed of crime. It's not in the news very much, but they got problems in Albuquerque, like any city with more than a couple hundred thousand people, because it's the same policies run by the same party with slightly different names. That's the only distinction. So see if the story of Joseph Rivera sounds familiar at all to the you, the denizens of Chicagoland.
Had a warrant out for his arrest after police say in July he was found passed out in a stolen car. But even with five previous felony convictions, a judge released him days later. Then he failed to appear in court. He was arrested again in September and released again. He didn't appear in court in October, yet when he was arrested, he was released again. He has been on the run since and now faces more burglary and car theft charges. Judge Joseph Montano ordered Rivera to stay behind bars.
The case for which he's finally been ordered to stay behind bars after he was arrested and released and didn't show and was arrested again and released and didn't show. And then he was arrested again and released and didn't show. The reason he's now finally behind bars is because when a woman named Anissa Tinnen was enjoying an evening with her 4-year-old granddaughter, she came face to face with this guy trying to get away from police. He broke into her home. When he broke in, when he tried to break in the second time, she had her gun and she shot him. She said, Miss Tinnen, I jumped over this couch and we met there by the front door. That's when he grabbed me and was upset and said to give him my keys. He said he didn't want to go to jail. He did threaten to hurt my granddaughter and me. But wait, he was a nonviolent offender in those thefts and burglaries that he was released for, and when he didn't show up for his court date, he was released, and then he was released again, and then he was released again, and now they finally catch up with him threatening to hurt a grandma and her 4-year-old granddaughter while he's trying to evade police yet again. And big city living.
Hopefully the homeowner won't be charged.
Big better not. City living.
Well, and it's Luis Huesco. His funeral is today. The wake was yesterday, and one thing that his sister said in that same meeting at the FOP Lodge was, why can't they find the person who did this to my brother? I feel sick. I'm not going to feel better until I know he's not walking around living his life when my brother's life is gone. And he had so much more to live for.
In L.A., Kitson's clothing stores in L.A., they can't get any help from police. Does that sound familiar? Police, and it's not the police's disposition, but it's the prosecutors, it's the mayor, Karen Bass, just like Brandon Johnson, just like Eric Adams, just like Spin the Wheel, name a big city mayor, Muriel Bowser in D.C., the other Brandon in Baltimore. Pick one, anyone. Why is this important? Well, because it's on the ballot in November. That's why it's important. I don't live there. You do, though. You may not live in a town named Los Angeles, but the story out of Los Angeles is the same story in Chicago. The story out of Albuquerque is the same story in Chicago. The story out of Washington, D.C. is the same story in Chicago. This is resonating, yes? Share it with a friend. Lisa Goodman is a stylist at the Kitson's clothing stores in L.A. And they came up with a novel approach to dealing with shoplifters at their four stores in L.A. Lisa explains to local media out there.
She stole $500 from our main store on Robertson. She stole $1,000 worth of our merchandise.
Shoplifters, beware. If you steal from Kitson stores, your photo, described as the new mugshot, will be displayed on the window for a little public shaming.
We feel, as a small business, we have to take matters into our own hands. We're not being supported, really, by the mayor. We're not being supported by the district attorney.
Kitson stylist Lisa Goodman says shoplifting losses at their four locations are in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Sometimes they come in and they just grab tables worth of stuff and take it to their car. And sometimes they just shove it in their pocket. They'll wear it out. Various.
Kitson not only hangs photos of shoplifters on the windows, they also post videos on social media of people shoplifting at their stores. And without fail, someone online ends up identifying the shoplifters.
We're publicly shaming them, and we're doing what we need to do to protect our business.
In some of the cases, after the shoplifters have been shamed, they actually come back to the store to return the merchandise they stole.
Oh, that's...
I love that.
That's the best thing ever. And then, can you take my picture down now? I return the items.
And video. They're posting videos of surveillance camera footage of the actual robbery on social media.
That's excellent.
Yeah, public shaming. Such a underappreciated tool, I think. Why don't we do that? You know, what's the police blotter for? The police blotter in, the local newspapers back in the day. It's for public shaming.
Oh, yeah. Public intoxication, Iowa. We'd always grab the Daily Iowa and look at, the police blotter. Who got arrested for what?
Shame has gone out of fashion, and where it's shaming somebody is appropriate. The left uses it inappropriately to silence people with whom they disagree because they're thugs. And we're talking about doing it on behalf of people who play by the rules against the thugs. Yeah, let's profile them. Your faces on billboards.
Oh, that's
store
right.
Windows, online, obviously, is cheap. I'd like to see the Kitson's approach be adopted by more businesses. You want to do something when you're not getting help from your local state government? Maybe Kitson's is the model. You got to do something to survive big city living, don't you?
Yeah, we have digital billboards, too, so they could pop that up real quick.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. All right. Rich in Indian Head Park is holding on with an important message, so
yes.
Better get to him. Rich in Indian Head Park here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Okay, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
Just wanted to say, I listen to the show every morning, and this morning I just wanted to call in and wish you, Dan, a happy birthday and many, many more. And you have a great day today.
What, I don't get a song? Thanks so much, Rich. I appreciate it. No, it's
all right. Let him. He's thinking. No. Rich, do you want to sing anything to Dan?
It's uncomfortable.
Happy birthday to you, Dan.
Thank you. That's good.
I don't have any music behind me.
Talk singing like Johnny Cash. I accept that. Thank you.
And Rich, we love you as a listener. Thank you. That was very nice.
Especially since this is my last day of freedom before I'm sent to State Board of Elections jail.
Yeah, tell me what's. I vaguely remember this, but
it's a complaint that Jelly Belly, through his henchmen, filed against the PAC that I run from the 2022 governor's race. It's totally without merit, and I have to testify at a hearing to dispense with this administrative process.
Do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Does this have anything
permission
to
treat the witness as hostile? Yes.
You
granted.
Can't handle the truth.
Granted. Yeah.
This has nothing to do with the Scream video, though.
No.
The Scream ad.
No.
But that's during that same campaign cycle.
No, but they... that's
really what they do. This is what Democrats do.
Yeah, it's just lawfare by other means. Administrative agencies over which they make appointments and they with their staffers, and we're gonna bleed as much time and money out of in this case me and the PAC as we can, just to punish you for daring to support Darren Bailey in this case,
right,
in that governor's race. Anyway, so yeah.
So is it a 2-day hearing?
They may take me right to the guillotine out back.
I hope you don't go to solitary confinement. They are trying to change the hours there in solitary confinement.
Yeah. So. Well, I'll write to everybody if I'm whisked away. All right, we got to get to we got to get to some other matters here. So on Friday, really interesting, this in advance of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the big guy, Mr. 10%, Joe Biden, sat down with Howard Stern. Boy.
I watched the whole thing. We talk about licking someone's butt.
Well, right. And also
or kissing it. Sorry.
Also, well, either way.
Sorry. That just got a little gross.
He's a butt licker.
Okay.
Sure.
Shoe licker. That's
how much egg on the faces of center-right conservative Howard Stern fans is there since he lost his mind during COVID and politically. I mean, I know he was never any sort of conservative, and I know his dalliance with libertarianism was a put-on, or he's just so, ill-informed and daffy, he doesn't even know what that meant. He's just trying to get people to pay attention to him, because that's sort of what we do in this culture, is make a spectacle of yourself no matter how absurd. How much it's an appeal to the lowest common denominator and people pay attention, then you get $500 million from Sirius XM or something. Not that he ever realized those numbers, because Sirius XM didn't, but I digress. Anyway, so first we got, before we even get to the payoff, which is the exchange they had about debates come the fall between Biden and Trump, we had the greatest hits of Joe's fabulism. Joe the Fabulist was present and accounted for, and they all weren't there, but a lot of them were. I actually hadn't even heard this one.
Me neither.
He was a matinee idol during the 70s, Joe Biden.
He was hot and single, and the ladies wanted him, Dan.
I got put in that 10 most eligible bachelor's list.
Because you were a United States Senator, you were a catch.
And so... And a lot of lovely women, but women would send very salacious pictures, and I just give them to the Secret Service. I thought somebody would think I was, and I just gave up.
First of all, you didn't have Secret Service protection back then as a senator, but I didn't know he was such a hot catch, the cat's meow.
He was bigger than the Beatles in the 70s. Joe Biden, no question.
Nobody wants to hear that. They're throwing their panties at you.
He was. Did you remember in Delaware? I mean, it was like Tom Jones with this guy everywhere he went. So he managed to survive all the women trying to capture his attention in the 70s.
Oh my God!
But before that, even
what else do we have? This is just the craziest interview.
I mean, he was a lifesaver. I know we've heard a lot of stories about the local pool
Well, Corn Pop, right? That's where he met Corn Pop. Mm-hmm. And then the black girls would play with the white hair on his legs. I remember him telling that.
Blonde, I think.
Something we never need to know anyway. Thanks.
But he was a lifesaver. I mean, literally. Basically, the David Hasselhoff character in Baywatch was loosely based on Joe Biden's life.
I learned a lot, and I made a lot of friends.
Did you ever save anyone's life when you were a lifeguard? Was anyone ever drowning?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, well, half a dozen times. Usually younger kids, you know, but...
You do the thing with the whistle and then jump in the bathing suit? And
yeah, you got it.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was a big pool. There were 7 lifeguard stands.
Wow. See, that would define my. I would brag about that everywhere I went.
Oh, by the way, I did it up in Lake Ontario too when I was in law school. But look, one of the things that
You saved a dude's life when you were in law school. You were still doing the lifeguard thing.
Yeah, lifeguards. I mean, you know, people just need help sometimes. I mean, it's not like it's so heroic.
They'll make a big deal about it. About me saving lives. All right, it's just what I do.
I mean. That is so okay. I was a lifeguard at a big pool. How does you remember how many lifeguard stands there were? First, it's just all made up. This is so phony baloney. And then he's acting like, you know, acting humble. Like, oh, come on, it's just part of the job, man. It's what we do.
That's what Joe Biden does wherever he goes. He saves lives. He pulls people out of danger. Sometimes people need help, and when somebody needs help, I don the cape and I'm there. And of course, when he wasn't saving lives and fending off the ladies, he was making America a more just place. This is a young man I'm talking about. When he essentially picked up the mantle. Oh, not picked up the mantle.
Excuse me.
This is a young man. He would have predated Martin Luther King. Before Martin Luther King, there was Joe Biden. And I'm not here to argue about who had more of an impact on ending government-imposed racial injustice in this country. That's for people like Joe Biden and scholars like Michael Beschloss to figure out.
And I looked at my mom. I said, honey, you haven't said anything. She said, Joey, remember, true story. She said, remember when they were desegregating Linfield, the neighborhood, and it was, 70 homes built at one suburbia? And I told you, and there was a black family moving in, and there was people were down there protesting. I told you not to go down there, and you went down. Remember that? And you came, got arrested, be standing on the porch with a black family.
Right.
And they brought you back, the police. And I said, yeah, Mom, I remember that.
There's no record of that ever occurring.
He's some civil rights icon. I mean, he's been pushing that bull jive line. Like, he was out there on the front lines in the civil rights movement. There's no record of any of that.
He lies about everything. He's done so for years. Most of those stories, I hadn't heard the he was a matinee idol in the 70s one before, but I've heard the others.
It just
rolls off his tongue. He repeats them, and it doesn't matter how many times they've been publicly debunked. It doesn't matter how many presidential campaigns he's had to stop because of his stealing of information, basically his dishonesty, plagiarism stealing,
right.
Neil Kinnock's speeches, for example. It just keeps going, and there's not the sort of pushback. Of course, they're not getting pushback from Howard Stern. He doesn't know anything, and to the extent he does, he's, you know, a credulous rube. He was playing that role in service of Joe Biden in that interview. Howard Stern, he's such a great interviewer. Oh, yeah, that was real impressive.
That was embarrassing. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
There should be, you know what? They should come out with Joe Biden action figures.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
For the various stages of his life. The young man saving lives as a lifeguard.
With hair on his legs.
The standout football player.
We haven't heard.
We've heard that. So second leading scorer in the state is a scrappy wide receiver. So maybe that those two combined, you know, a football player. Obviously, he's a great student. He's number one in his class at this law school, and he was faculty at this law school. All these things are false, but it's what he says. You could just do these different action figures for all the stages.
Him in a classroom, you could have different, you know, like Barbie land. You can have Biden land and put him in different situations at a pool.
Well, by the way, just on the whole, you know, pandering for the black vote when he's not directly insulting them. You know, you ain't black if you don't vote for Joe Biden. Actually, there was a fun shot that Colin Jost got in at the White House Correspondents' Dinner the next day. This is the Saturday Night Live fake news guy. He knows fake news purveyors when he sees them.
Like many of you here tonight, I pretend to do news on TV. My weekend update co-anchor, Michael Che, was going to join me here tonight, but in solidarity with President Biden, I decided to lose all my black support.
Oh, too soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Boo, the boo-boo.
Can you call them the boo birds?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Ooh.
That's not right.
At least we got one. At least we got one or
one.
Two.
One. That was it, because Biden was horrible.
But of course, the big news in the Stern interview was the debate issue. You're going to debate Trump. And Howard Stern had some free debating advice for Joe Biden, which was worth exactly what it cost.
I would stand there on stage with Trump and I would repeat over and over again, excuse me, please find me 11,000 votes so that I can win the election. I would just repeat that over and over again. And then I'd say to the audience, what are we debating? A man picked up the phone and wanted to say, fake the election, give me 11,000 votes. I don't know how any American who loves this country, that's the end of the debate. You don't get to run if you're going to fix an election.
Well, look, I think I said on January 6th, when they were storming the Capitol.
And a police officer died.
Yep. And, and he would say nothing. He was sitting in that office off the that dining area off the Oval Office for 3 hours and said nothing. I was supposed to make a speech on the economy that day. Instead, I made a speech from I was in Delaware on that issue because I was elected president, but I wasn't sworn in yet. The idea that we were actually not, it was derelict, it was almost criminal. He did nothing. He just sat there and watched what was happening. Not a single, and now he wants to call, he calls them patriots and victims, and I mean, and says he's going to pardon them all if he's reelected.
How do some of the guys that you served in the Senate with, I'm talking about Republicans.
They don't.
How do they not, how are they going along with this?
Well, I don't think, look, this is not your father's Republican Party.
No, it isn't.
This is you know, I had a lot of Republicans, including the old segregationists that I served with, who at least you could talk to, at least on matters relating to, they were totally wrong on civil rights. But the fact is that they understood there's a need for a consensus to run this country.
Yeah, at least you could talk to the old segregationists. By the way, they were in your party for the most part, not the Republican Party. But I digress. So Stern starts with the fictional version of the Raffensperger call, and that prompts Joe Biden to give his canned retort on January 6th. And none of what either one of them said is true. I just thought the Raffensperger call is particularly unnerving to me because we have the transcript.
Right. Well, he didn't take the time to read the transcripts, obviously.
They have the all I need to do is find 11,000 votes. Find the 11,000 plus votes I need. And that's what everybody who is not fair-minded and is not able to critically think, has no intellectual curiosity, and just dislikes Trump, just repeats the same way that that drone Howard Stern did. You had election attorneys, by the way, who have not been indicted, who were on that call too. Were they party to it? I thought this was a conspiracy. So why hasn't Cleta Mitchell been indicted? She was on that call. Did you know that? Do we remember these things? It's important. It's important to push back on this because you're gonna if he's saying it on Stern. I mean, he's focused on January 6th, and Stern was on the Raffensperger call. But between Stern and Biden, you're getting a pretty good representative sample of what you're going to hear from leftist talking heads from now till November. And I just want to remind people of a portion of the transcript of the call that is not the audio clips are, you know, are not ubiquitous like the famous portion of the back and forth between Trump and Raffensperger, where he sort of inarticulately says, you know, I just need you to find the votes. But this was after he had set up his case with a very specific distillation of why he thought there needed to be a reexamination of the count. And you can disagree and you can say they couldn't produce any evidence. That's fine. But it wasn't go find the votes, go rig the election, go do something illegal, Brad Raffensperger. He said, this is from the transcript, as published in the Amazon Post. Trump saying to him, we've had hundreds of thousands of ballots that we're able to actually, we'll get you a pretty accurate number. You don't need much of a number because the number in theory I lost by, the margin would be 11,779. But you have a substantial number of people, thousands and thousands, who went to the voting place on November 3rd, told they couldn't vote. They were told they couldn't vote because a ballot had been put on their name. And, you know, that's very, very, very sad. We had, I believe it's about 4,502 voters who voted but weren't on the voter registration list. So it's 4,502 who voted, but they weren't on the voter registration roll, which they had to be. You had 18,325 vacant address voters. The address was vacant. They're not allowed to be counted. That's 18,325. Smaller number, you had 904 who only voted where they just had a PO, post office box, and they had a post office box number. That's not allowed. We had at least 18,000, and that's on tape. We had them counted very painstakingly. 18,000 voters having to do with some name. She's a vote scammer, a professional vote scammer and hustler. That was the tape that's been shown all over the world that makes everybody look bad, you, me, and everybody else. So, I mean, there's just specific numbers. Obviously, he was briefed by campaign staff and lawyers or some combination of the two that he goes through. That's all in the run-up to the that one phrase that he uses that is completely twisted beyond recognition if you don't look at the context and what everything else that was said in the call, which, of course, Howard Stern didn't and Joe Biden wouldn't.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So AOC, member of the Social Spice Girls, front girl, actually, she showed up to Columbia University to kibitz with her fellow pro-Hamas folk. She complimented what they were doing at Columbia University. Let's see if you can pick up this.
Nice to meet you. Thank you so much for coming out here. It's great, the support we're getting. People with different backgrounds in politics just here for the cause.
Yeah, it's a little hard to hear because, you know, they got the drum circle thing going on. But
they have a big party there.
But she complimented the leadership of the Pitt protesters, pro-Islamist terrorist protesters at Columbia University, that include, actually, most notably, this dude named Kamani James, who has been dismissed from the school for reasons including publicly saying that Zionists don't deserve to live, not to mention what he and others have engineered at Columbia. And it's interesting because there were some discussions inside the autonomous zone, the decolonization area at Columbia, that shows how organized this is. There was a Q&A session where you had one of the negotiators from the protesters, and that's how they were termed. The negotiators here to answer some questions, and then they have to get back to negotiations with the university. What's there to negotiate?
Don't negotiate with terrorists.
They're and the back and forth about, so what's the protocol with the social media posts? Are you going to be sending out more communiques about what we should and shouldn't post? So the messaging and the division of labor, if you will, it's actually quite organized, at least at Columbia. And that's what AOC, I guess, came to compliment. But can you imagine a Republican, a conservative, coming to compliment the leadership of a pro-totalitarian crew like AOC did at Columbia? Because that's what they are.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I just can't believe every campus is handling this differently. At Indiana University, 23 people arrested, after the third day of protest, and they're arresting them while they're trying to set up tents. Then you have UCLA, where all the cops are there, the LA cops were there, and then they were told to stand down. And so the encampment that they prevented from being built is now up and running.
It's being handled very similarly, actually, in most places. There's deference, because that's our culture. There's deference to these campus Huns, and that's what they are. And so there are exceptions. I mean, you've probably seen now Georgia State Troopers at Emory.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit of a different story.
I loved it.
Picking a woman up and carrying her when she falls, you know, she drops to the ground and plays dead, you know.
You're hurting me. So he just
picked her up. And then another guy who did like a very good form tackle, Wilbur Marshall quality on the campus there. So there's some of that in Texas and Georgia, but for the most part, there's deference. And even where there are arrests made, you immediately get release, and you get universities like Columbia saying nobody is going to be discharged from the school, I guess with the exception of the leader of the protesters, the pro-Islamist terrorist protesters. So in some places, you have to get the students into the act, where the administration won't act.
Oh, I love this.
A bunch of honky frat boys at ASU.
Look at these. Right. We've got the white frat boys throwing away protesters' belongings, and we've got the pigs in brown doing nothing about it, although we are being forced off campus. Pigs in brown.
See, what people don't know, fraternities are very philanthropic and community-based, so when, you know, they saw that the officers needed help getting their junk, and I mean their junk, their tents, their sleeping bags out of their, you know, main area, they would just jumped right in and helped and put the garbage in the truck.
Cal Poly, yeah, but again, it's deference in most places. Cal Poly Humboldt in California, they've done the same thing as Columbia. They've canceled the rest of the semester in terms of in-person instruction, indoctrination, whatever you prefer. And that was where you had these pit protesters, pro-Islamist terrorist protesters, assaulting police officers. That's where that occurred. You've had arrests in other places. Jill Stein, actually, the Green Party candidate, got arrested at Washington University.
Wash U.
Yeah. And this was, again, in scrums with police. You see a lot of scrums with police officers. Well, they're pigs, as you just heard from that delicate little flower at ASU.
At Wash U, I got to tell this kid, I don't know if he's transitioning, but he has purple hair, and this is why he's out there and doesn't mind getting arrested, Dan.
There are people who don't have the choice on whether their life is risked over this or not. If all I have to risk is maybe sitting in a cell for a minute to help that, I will.
It's heroic. We saw the same thing at UIC. You had these protesters, pro-Islamist terrorist protesters, with a reinforced, you know, banners and placards that were using them as weapons to push back against police. There was one arrest made at UIC. Of course, we know what's going on at Northwestern.
Well,
U of I, too. All over the Big Ten.
Students who refuse to remove their tents, Dan, will be subject to arrest, and their tents will be removed by the university. Not happening.
At ASU, they have some of the reporting was of the 69 people arrested, very few were students. And we know this. We know that this is organized and orchestrated, and it includes professional agitators that are underwritten by George Soros and other leftist, you know, pro-chaos well-to-dos. The question is why? Soros and other elites are funding the campus agitators and stoking the anti-Semitic protests. Yeah, we know. So why would they do that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
At Northwestern last night, 100 counter-protesters, people in the community, all with their Jewish, with their Israeli flags, came and circled around the group that was glamping. And then they played the national anthem, and I'm telling you, I got the chills. All their way to the Israeli and American flags. I just thought it was wonderful to shove it in their faces, like, you know, we're American. And America supports Israel.
Yeah, it's the battle should be joined. There's no question. So why would there be such support? And by the way, this has been longstanding. So it's not just this moment. It's a continuation of supporting the Students for Justice and Palestine chapters all over the country, of seeding the BDS movement that, as we've talked about a number of times now, was present when I was at Northwestern back in the Stone Age. Going on for a long time, a lot of the same financiers. So what's their end game? Maybe we're seeing their end game or part of it. Mike Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Happy birthday, Dan. Hey, I just want to say that, you know, okay, there's no such thing as shame with these blue-haired shims, but their parents are funding these knuckleheads. And if we can find Shia LaBeouf's flag just by geolocation, we can find every one of these parents and go ahead and shame them, because they're the ones who deserve the shame at this point for the never-ending party of destroying America. That's what I got.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, yeah, some of them are out protesting with the kids, as we heard from that father at USC last week. Uh-huh. Also, this was bound to happen. Surprised it took as long as it did. We have the rage transference defense being advanced. A psychologist telling the New York Post, the protesters may feel angry for the pandemic taking away pivotal, highly anticipated experiences for them. For example, socialization in college and missing graduations. And thus they're using protesting as a way to release their anger. The COVID shutdowns have generated this pro-Palestinian rage.
Oh, really? That's a bit of a stretch.
I like that. But it's typical. I mean, the rioting in the summer of 2020 and the looting, that was symbolic taking. That's black rage as a result of the legacy of slavery and so on and so forth. It's always the rage transference. You're always going to get that from the left. And so here it is. Try that when it's like, if you're a person who plays by the rules, try it like some sort of inflation and the inability to pay my bills is to blame for my raging in one direction or another. Try that on. Maybe try that at your workplace and see how well that goes. See if anybody can make that fly at their workplace, what the kids are saying and what the adults are offering in their defense for both the kids and their deference to the kids.
Hmm. Well, what about violating the civil rights of Jewish students? I mean, they're being threatened because of their religion. And here's a Jewish student at UCLA.
Do students, Jewish students, feel safe? Absolutely not. I think what's happening right now is making everyone feel extremely unsafe. We really do fear for our lives and the future.
I have a Jewish neighbor who said, you know what? They killed 1,500 of ours. We killed 30,000 of theirs. Enough already. Oh, really? Because when they come, they're not coming to my house. They're going to come to your house. If it gets to that.
Well, yeah, I don't. There's no magic numbers here. You're trying to neutralize a threat. Nobody said it was going to be one for one. I mean, I don't know. People who
Jewish supporters.
People who do the body count as a proxy for understanding war just have no idea what they're talking about. They put no thought into it. Just make it stop. It's the same. It's the make it stop.
Yep.
It's just like violence on the streets of Chicago. I'm not going to do anything different, but just make it stop. Well, who do you want to make it stop? When you're not going to do anything different, when you're party to why it started and continues. No, just make it stop. I've had enough. Oh, okay. Well,
if you've had enough, then all right.
Guess what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't get to redraw those lines, Robert in Bloomingdale.
Good morning. I would just like to know, what is the just solution to this problem? Because for 75 years, this thing's been brewing and brewing. And I Googled the map of Israel, and if you look up a map of Ukraine or Mexico or any country, you could see a map when it comes to Israel. Does it even have a map?
Yeah.
Do they have a map and borders? Or
yes.
What is going on here? Because that makes no sense if you dig a little deeper into it. It makes no sense.
What is going on here is there is an illiberal, Islamo-fascist movement that manifests itself both through terrorist organizations and state sponsors of terror to wipe Israel and the Israelis off the map. And by the way, they have the same attitude about Jews that live in other countries, too. That's what's going on here.
And you know
what's going on here is Islamo supremacy. What's confusing about that?
Got a text message, Dan and Amy. Where's the Jewish leadership? Schumer, Raskin, Nadler, Schiff, Schneider, Schakowsky. Jan, that's her district, isn't it?
They got to middle the issue to keep their solidarity and marginalization coalition together for November, of course, just like Biden does. Which is why they're muted, which is why Schumer called for new elections in Israel, because it's time for Bibi to go. And which is why they, on the one hand, support Israel and the Iron Dome and vote for the aid. On the other hand, Bibi's got to go. They have to send messages to both camps to stick with us. Because it's about domestic politics for them, not about what's right for mankind. What else is new?
And you know who's loving this? Hamas.
There was a different approach, by the way, taken once upon a time to civil unrest on college campuses in his state at that time. The state was California. The time period was the 60s. The governor was Ronald Reagan. I always tell the story about Ronald Reagan being protested on a college campus by these the campus Huns of his day. Where are your future? Where are your future? And then he writes on a legal pad, "If you're my future, I'm selling my bonds." You know, the quips, but you know, but people forget Reagan as governor. Reagan as governor wasn't sort of the genteel grandfather type that he sort of became known as, of course, through his presidency. He was a little bit more pointed. He was not afraid to throw some rhetorical haymakers and speak with moral clarity in a pointed fashion about campus violence, the same way he later spoke about the evil empire with moral clarity. Take a listen to this nice compilation of Ronald Reagan. This is what governors and university presidents could be doing. I mean, they are in states like Texas, but not states that are run by the other side, right?
Those people told you for days in advance that if the university sought to go ahead with that construction, they were going to physically destroy the university.
Why did you negotiate many times?
Negotiate? What is to negotiate? What is?
University is a public institution.
That's right. But the university,
its own community, and for the community of Berkeley that live around it.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
I'm sick and tired of the argument about whether some effort to enforce law and order is going to escalate anything at all. Plain truth of the matter is this has to stop, and it has to stop like the day before yesterday.
I would like to propose that the issue is that on the campuses, you who are adults, you who are entrusted with those young people and their guidance, have a responsibility to make it plain to them from the very beginning that you yourselves do not tolerate the kind of conduct that has led to the burning of Wheeler Hall, that has led to two murders on the campus of UCLA.
You created an atmosphere on the campus where no one wants to listen. No,
you are a liar.
I have read and I have been questioned since I've been here about certain demonstrations against my coming. And I would like to say just one thing. And to those who demonstrate so, I wonder if they have ever asked themselves that if they should have the kind of government they apparently seek, no one would ever be able to do what they're doing again.
Well, wow, that gave me the chills.
Sort of like our lead in to Frank from Arlington Heights is Tuesday in-depth history with Frank from Arlington Heights. Nothing new in this world, just the history you don't know. I think as we talked about with Professor Jacobson from Cornell, this is different than the 60s. It's much more severe. It's much more dangerous. It's not anti-war protests and civil rights protests. And even if the cause was more just back then, which it was, it doesn't legitimize lawlessness, as Reagan, that was the point that Reagan was making, obviously. But nothing new. And frankly, what was tolerated, what Reagan was railing against, college presidents of that era, tolerating, appeasing, deferring to, sowed the seeds that we're bearing today. George in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan, I wonder if any of these students protesting had to read the diary of Anne Frank. And also, I'd like to thank you for all the hard work you did during that governor's race in Illinois. You made a lot of people have hope. It didn't happen, but I thank you.
Thanks for the call, George. Yeah, Diary of Anne Frank. How about the late, great Elie Wiesel's Night? Did they still read that in high school? I did. Everyone should.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories. Only the biggest. And only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Meet Monroe County, New York, District Attorney Sandra Dorley.
She likes to party. Woo!
She's a Democrat who switched to the GOP. And she was doing 55 and a 35, as you'll hear. She conceded she was. Right. So she was stopped by local police. She wasn't happy about it.
No, she...
So she didn't stop. She just drove home. And that's when this exchange occurred between her and the officer who attempted to stop her for speeding.
Sorry, I'm the DA. I was going 55, coming home from work.
55 and a 35.
I don't really care.
Okay.
So
can you come over here? No. This is on a traffic stop, ma'am.
Yes, it is. You can call Dennis Kohlmeier right now.
I'm telling you why I stopped you. You didn't stop at all. Did you not hear my lights or sirens or anything?
No, I didn't actually. I was on the phone.
Okay. Well, you're not supposed to be on the phone while you're driving either.
Yes, I am. With the hands-free, absolutely.
Okay. Why are you so upset at me? I'm doing my job. Mm-hmm. You just admitted to me that you were going 55 and a 35 on Phillips Road.
Can you please tell him to leave me alone? It's...
Officer Christofoli. Can you stay over here, ma'am?
I'm not staying over here.
This is a legal traffic stop. Do you have your ID?
No, it's in my purse. here.
You have your purse right there.
No, this is my lunch. Would you talk to your talk to Dennis? This is ridiculous. Just go away.
Hello, sir.
Go away.
Just go away.
Good. Rules ma'am, can you please stay at the back? This is a ma'am, this is legal traffic stop. Can you please stay over here?
No. No. Hey, baby, get your little guy out of here.
Sir. I stopped her for going 55 in a 35 on Phillips Road.
Phillips Road.
And she failed to stop. She drove all the way back home and parked in her garage. And now she's not complying with any of my commands. Ma'am, do not go inside.
Oh, my God.
I want to get something to eat.
You're annoying me.
Yep. All right. Ma'am, come outside. You can't just go inside. This is a traffic stop. Here's your phone back.
I understand the law better than you.
953, can you have a supervisor come to the scene?
No. Get out of my house.
I don't know why you're acting like this towards me.
Because.
Can you please go to the back of the vehicle?
I'm not going to. I'm home. I was 55.
I don't care if you got home. You were supposed to stop at Phillips Road when I pulled you over. When my lights were initiated.
I didn't know you were stopping me. There was lots of other people on the road.
I was right behind you.
Yeah? There were other people on the road, too.
Okay, I was directly behind you.
I'm not dealing with you right now.
Can you please step over here?
I'm not going to.
What is the reason you're so against what I'm doing? I'm doing my job. You say you're a DA?
I am the DA.
The DA.
Okay, let me get you my
The
badge.
Ohio State.
I am the DA in Monroe
County. I just don't understand the hostility towards me. I'm doing my job.
No, you're being...
How am I being an
I am the DA in Monroe County.
I understand
yes,
that, but that doesn't give you a right to go 55 and a 35. And you even admitted to me that you went 50. I understand
don't really
that,
care.
Ma'am.
I don't really
I understand
care.
That.
I don't, you know what? If you give me a traffic ticket, that's fine. I'm the one who prosecutes it, okay? Just go ahead and do it. Go ahead.
I just don't understand the hostility. I understand you're coming home from work.
Not remorseful.
And half the time I was on the phone with Dennis telling him, why are you pulling me over?
You're not even supposed to be on the phone to begin with. You should know that.
Oh, I'm hands-free? Absolutely. Okay. You should know the law.
Okay. If it is hands-free, that's great. But at the end of the day, you're going 55 and a 35. That's 20 miles over the speed limit.
Okay.
My question is, why didn't you just taser? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text
line.
Well,
she looks like googly-eyed and like she's on something. She said she had a long day. She had 3 murder trials that day, Dan.
So
she was very exhausted. Oh, I have no sympathy for this woman
Boy,
her excuses were just unbelievable.
It's just delightful when that ruling class mentality presents itself, doesn't it? Who wants to try to get away with that routine if they get pulled over, by that doesn't happen in the city really much anymore because they're opposed to traffic stops. You get pulled over in the suburbs and you go into that routine that you heard from the suburban DA in New York. So anyway, supervisor was called. You heard the officer call him. She said she was on the phone with him. Well. Let's get the exciting conclusion of the story. Will the supervisor, will he back the play of his officer? Or will he back the play of the prosecutor?
Let's find out.
With whom the police department works. You know, what's the politics of this? How is this going to work?
Hi.
Hi. I'll talk to Jeff. Jeff.
Okay.
I was just on the phone with the chief.
Okay. I'm the supervisor with her now, so.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. I didn't want to pull over on Phillips Road. It was just, I figured I'd just pull into my driveway.
Okay. Well,
and I called Dennis and I said, that's me that they're trying to stop.
Okay.
So that's the end of the story.
She can't be stopped.
Okay. But you should know better, right?
I was speeding. I know that.
Okay. So why didn't you just stop like you're supposed to?
Because I didn't feel like stopping on Phillips Road
at 5:30. That's not your choice. You know that.
Well, I made it my choice.
Okay. Wow. Now you made it a bigger deal than it needed to be.
It's a really bigger deal. And when people start coming, it's a much bigger deal.
Well, you caused that, Sandra. Well, what do you want us to do? Not do our job because it's you?
No, it's fine. I said, write me a ticket. But I was just saying, I was not
up
at Phillips Road at 5:30.
Okay, well, you broke another law because of that. Right? And you should know better. That's not a traffic ticket. That's an arrestable offense, Sandra. You know this.
No,
why would you not just pull over? Yeah. You made it a bigger deal than it needed to be. And you knew why you were getting stopped, clearly.
Clearly.
He could have stopped you, had a conversation with you, and been done with it. But now you made it this whole big
clearly.
Deal. For no reason. Did you provide him your license and registration?
Yeah.
Okay. You have her ID?
I gave it back to her. It's attached to the job and everything.
I didn't want to stop at Phillips Road. I was right down the street. I figured I will just stop in my driveway. That's what I figured. I thought it would be easier. Apparently, I was wrong.
Yeah, well, that was not the right choice.
You didn't think it would be easier, counselor. No. You just said I did it because I felt like it, not because it was easier for her or the police. I felt like it. No. And the whole write me a ticket, I said you write me a ticket. You said write me a ticket. I'm the one who prosecutes it. What am I going to do? Prosecute myself? Okay.
Text messages. Murder cases is code for margaritas. And why these people do not just take the medicine is just amazing. One quick ticket and move on. Stupid people.
Because there are betters. And that's how they think of themselves. All I do for you people, and I have to live under the same laws as you do? That doesn't seem right.
She was too busy releasing repeat violent offenders, Dan and Amy, without bail.
Jay in Lowell, Indiana.
Yeah, I got an idea. As being an ex-police officer, why didn't he arrest her for fleeing and eluding? That's what he should have done. I'm not putting him down, but that's what should have been done to her.
Totally agree. Thanks for the call, Jay. 100%. When the supervisor came and said, as you just heard him, you know, not complying with an officer's effective command to pull over is an arrestable offense. And so you're going to get arrested right now. Officer, put her in handcuffs and take her to the station. That's exactly what should have happened. You want to send a message to somebody who's got a bit of a ruling class attitude that needs adjusting? Do so under the law. Sandra Dorley. And here again, it's the same admonition we have for her that we have when we talk about all these police-involved shootings. I don't care if it's a honky Republican, although it seems like she's still clinging to some of her Democrat attitudes, or a minority in an urban center. It's the behavior. It is not the profile. Simple. Doesn't it make life so much simpler?
Now this morning, Governor Kathy Hochul is getting a state commission task force to look into the incident.
Oh, great.
Wow.
Great. Look into the incident. What's there to look into?
It's all right there.
It's all been conceded by both parties.
Dial the local police chief to complain.
I mean, you have the state's attorney saying what happened and the police agreeing with her. What's there to investigate? Kevin in Austin, Texas.
It also goes to poor judgment. All she had to do was pull over. When she got pulled over, flash her badge and say, hey, I'm the one to prosecute her. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens all the time, I'm sure, in Cook County if the state's attorney gets pulled over. Oh, sorry. Go right ahead. Have a good rest of the day. Poor judgment. And these people are prosecuting? Mm-hmm. What kind of judgment do they have when they do that? Just stupid.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. That's what Amy does when you get pulled over. It's like, boom.
Bad media press credential.
Exactly. Right.
No,
yeah.
I don't do that. I say,
girls of
you?
Iowa, girls of the Big Ten calendar. Bang.
And sir, if you don't like this one, I have one from the year before.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Works every time, Dan. Boom.
It is reminiscent of one of our other favorite elected official police stops in the history of elected officials being pulled over by police for simple traffic violations.
This is the best ever.
The town of Ulster, New York. It's New York again. Imagine New York having a problem with ruling class politicians.
The high and mighty.
A county legislator named Jennifer Schwartz Berkey. She got pulled over, and then this happened.
You know, I work for the county.
Okay.
The county government. I'm a county legislator. I'm going to meet the consulate right now at the Maritime Museum.
Okay.
Oh, you're not going to give me a ticket, are you?
I haven't decided yet.
I'm completely broke, public servant.
Okay. I mean, I haven't decided yet. I'm just looking for the documents.
Oh, here's my card.
Okay.
At least she pulled
over.
I'm
going to be late for the consulate.
No, okay, it's no reason to cry.
Well, no, it's my job, catch me.
Okay. Just a driver's license.
Waterworks.
And do you have the registration to vehicle? You can have your card back there.
I hope I do. And then I have to go to the Ulster County SUNY Ulster graduation.
Okay.
And now I'm supposed to go home and pick up my son to go to these parties.
Okay.
Please don't give me a ticket. I'm broke. I'm completely broke.
Okay, if you just have
and
to...
And if you tell people, it's going to hurt me.
Okay, well, I don't know.
I'm totally broke. I made $20,000 last year.
Okay.
Please don't give me a ticket.
Let me see your
you
tax return.
Registration.
I can't afford to change my insurance. Please.
Okay, if you could just try to find the registration for me, I appreciate it.
No, I want license, registration,
insurance,
and tax returns.
Oh, but it gets better.
Sorry, I'm having a panic attack.
You need medical attention? Would you like me to call you an ambulance?
I can't.
Okay, if you want to sit down, I can explain this to you, okay?
You better give me a ticket. I'm going to take it to the court because I have PTSD. I'm going to protest this in court. And you're telling me that you singled me out. That's what you're telling me, right? And then everyone was going at the same pace, right? I drive on that road at 30 miles an hour all the time.
Are you going to listen to me or
yes,
you?
Yes, I will listen to you, and you're not going to let me go, even though I'm a county legislator. And I always do everything right, and I follow the law, and I was at the same pace as every other car.
Not always.
Ma'am, are you going to let me explain this to you here?
Yes, but I am also going to record our conversation.
Okay, it's being recorded. We have video right here, and the whole conversation has been recorded here, too, okay? You're more than welcome to record it, okay? All right.
Yeah, you don't have to record it. I'm recording because I can't wait to show all the guys back at the station.
He's so calm. And collectively, ma'am, do you need medical attention?
Oh, that's...
Ma'am, can you... I can explain this to you.
Just remember, by the way, Jennifer Berkey Schwartz, she lost her reelection as a county legislator after that incident, but just barely. But between Berkey and Sandra Durley, just remember that when you hear people sort of being deferential to their elected officials. These are our betters. We have such great representation. I mean, there are just so many examples of this, those are two of the better ones, I got to say, particularly since one was on the law enforcement side, the criminal justice system side, the district attorney. It's good stuff.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The business of grooming kids in K-12. This was posted, Libs of TikTok, picking this up, Dateline Chicago for Libs of TikTok. CPS, Q&A, or like FAQ essentially, with respect to CPS curriculum, a training on the LGBTQ2SIA++++. Parents are allowed to opt their child out of sex education topics, as well as are allowed to opt their child out of LGBTQ+ topics that are covered in other subjects, classes, or activities. True or false? That's false.
It is false. It used to be true, but they changed it.
Yeah. No, that's false.
So now you can't,
That's false. So when the dudes, the scantily clad dudes, come in to gyrate and shake their junk around in front of the kids, your kid's going to have to participate, for example. Not to mention the wall-to-wall indoctrination that occurs throughout the school day in advance of LGBTQ++++++. And so Why not? Why not go the way of Downers Grove? The Downers Grove Public Library. We had that little issue with the Library Board of Trustees we talked about over the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, they had a special session, and he's been bounced.
The cast, well, the one of the trustees by the right. Village Board, of course, we talked about. And that just pay no attention to the CAS report coming out of the National Health Service in Britain. Certainly the majority of the board in the Village of Downers Grove won't. You expect this stuff, I guess, in CPS. And Downers Grove Public Library has announced story time and craft making events in June that will teach the virtues of homosexuality to children aged 2 to 6. Pride Story Time, it's right here. Pride Story Time, ages 2 to 6, Friday, June 14th. Mark your calendars. Join us for a librarian-led family story time filled with picture books, stories, and songs that celebrate Pride Month. Right. Maybe they'll work in some anti-Semitic, pro-Hamas business, too, like that a drag queen story hour in Amherst, Massachusetts we brought you.
Yeah, with a pro-Palestinian drag queen who would get thrown off a building if he did dare step foot in Gaza.
Swapna Jagani runs the Downers Grove Public Library. Just naming names here. Pride Storytime, ages 2 to 6. That's in the kids' program room at the library. Of course it is. The Downers Grove Public Library has a wall of fame that features notable homosexuals from history. And Bill Nienberg won't be there to offer any objections because he's the trustee that was removed for daring to oppose all of this Rainbow Reich indoctrination going on at the library. Now, of course, this is voluntary. So you'll have, this has to be parents bringing their toddlers to this program, but they will.
Oh,
it'll fill up.
They will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could text us at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I mean, you can have what, I mean, I shouldn't say you can have whatever event you want, but... you can promote whatever viewpoint you want. But, maybe on behalf of the deposed Bill Nienberg, shouldn't those residents of Downers Grove who attended the meetings, maybe those who other felt similarly but didn't attend, on behalf of Nienberg, to oppose his impeachment, if you will, by the Downers Grove Village Board, shouldn't they be at the source of the problem, the institution that they finance, and say, what are we doing here? And I want counter-programming.
Oh.
And just the same way we've always talked about is you can have your program if you want, and if parents want to engage in this sort of intellectual debauchery, then I suppose they're entitled to do that. But we want alternative programming. Why does everybody have to genuflect before the one-size-fits-all pride programming at the Downers Grove Library or anywhere else? The whole culture of deference that we keep talking about, it's easy to talk about when you see the sort of ignorance on display on college campuses and you hear people saying the sort of ridiculous, intemperate things that they are saying. But what about when it's just an event that you're not going to? I mean, this is how these groups and their acolytes insinuate themselves into these institutions, take control of the institutions, and then take control of the community. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Isn't that what's happened? Or is there some other explanation? How did Downers Grove get to this place, for example? Anybody have any thoughts? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I mean, did Chicagoans all move to Downers Grove and Glen Ellen and Hinsdale? And, I mean, the list goes on and on. Because when you were growing up, DuPage County, when I was growing up, DuPage County was strong.
Growing up, 5 minutes ago. I mean, this is all gone over the edge in the last decade. No, I understand there were decisions that were being made that started to push these communities to the edge that it has now gone over. But in terms of the domination by cultural Marxists in representative bodies of government in DuPage County, for example, including Downers Grove, that's relatively recent. So anybody want to hazard another explanation? By the way, this is happening, these sorts of events, not just Downers Grove, Mount Prospect.
Uh-oh. You talking about my hometown, Mount Prospect?
Yeah.
Because that was
They're building on the nudist colony that you were raised in.
No, I did live in a home that was previously owned by a nudist, yes.
We got this email from, I guess, a Mount Prospectian. Under youth events, the library will have a family pride party for ages 3 to 12. And their families with all sorts of activities. The teen events include Pride Reads for Teens, along with a craft activity. Then we have Pride Story Time for ages 2 to 5. Oh, just like Downers Grove. Of course, the adults can, the adults will be there. They'll be treated to a discussion by a UIC professor entitled Making Change, A History of LGBTQ Activism. Uh-huh. Yeah, but it's not happening where you live, or you're not paying attention, or you don't care, or you don't know what to do. Jack in Northwest Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. I actually resided in Downers Grove from 93 until a few years ago, and I saw the change. I saw the change occurring election by election. When I moved in, very red, very, very consistently Republican. And over time, what I saw happen, I actually, worked in the city as well. So I saw the younger folks, they migrate from various universities. They live in various neighborhoods in the city. They meet their partner. They move out to the burbs, Downers being one of them. Their attitude's completely different. So this is really not surprising because there are a bunch of 30-somethings. Many of them I still stay in contact with, and I know what their politics are. And this is just acceptable, it's tolerant, and there's a reason why DuPage has turned blue. And I was shocked when it happened because I wasn't paying attention, but it's turning bluer every day. And it's the attitudes of the younger folks coming in, having kids, and see nothing wrong with exposing their five-year-old to these alternative lifestyles. So it's going to happen. And no one will object because the voters and those living in those neighborhoods actually enjoy this. And that's just the tragedy of it and one of the reasons why I bailed.
Thanks for the call, Jack.
Got a bunch of text messages. Dan and Amy, is there going to be a Bible story hour?
Yeah, right.
For 2 to 6-year-olds?
Right. Well, that's my point. Why not propose that? See what the reaction is. I'm sure you'll hear church and state arguments or some other specious response from the library.
Got another one. In the spirit of equal time, the library board is going to host Kirk Cameron's next book tour.
Yeah, right. Right. Uh-huh. Or
good ideas.
Yeah, I mean, there are other the Tuttle Twins books. Yeah, do that. Who wants to host that? Uh-huh. I mean, there needs, alternative programming is the way to go. You can't just protest this intellectual debauchery. You should.
They want.
But you can't just do that. You have to push them to expand the universe of content, because that's what they're trying to do, is to constrict it and make this a up or down on, drag queen story time for 2 to 5-year-olds. But the tolerance, and I am very confident and comfortable with my viewpoints and opposing viewpoints and having free exchanges of ideas. Okay, well, let's put that to the test. Yeah, Tuttle Twins. And let's see how many people show up. Tuttle Twins, Bible Story Hour, whatever. Have reruns of Davy and Goliath in the kids' playroom. But related story, Bill Maher had that commentary last week that we discussed where he talked about the pedo-friendly nature of Hollywood. And he didn't say it, but the party to which he affiliates. Where do you think minor attracted persons, where did that euphemism come from? And one of the points that Maher made, so Bill Maher making it, is, the famous Willie Sutton observation, I rob banks because that's where the money is. Well, these pedophiles that wind up his words, you know, at Nickelodeon or just Disney. I mean, of course, he said, or the church. Well, that's where the kids are. Are the kids also in schools? Government schools? Are the kids also at the libraries? Yeah. And you're sure that all these leftists in charge of these institutions are maintaining proper quality control? Because, of course, safety is their raison d'etre, isn't it? Our friend Andy Ngo, the investigative journalist, is looking into a case of a 32-year-old non-binary public library worker from Addison who was arrested on April 24th of suspicion of seven felony child abuse crimes.
What?
Stephen Craigie is his name, accused of uploading child sexual abuse content on Discord and X and possessing the content on his devices.
Gross. And he's around children?
32-year-old non-binary public library worker.
Non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a map.
Mm-hmm.
Minor attracted person.
Mike in Littleton, Colorado.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Well, you know, how did we get here? You know, ashamedly, I've always kind of accounted or always figured the law and common sense would save us. And I thought, you know, well, this would never get a foothold. It's just so crazy and out there. And they're destroying the law faster than I can use the law to save the law. And I don't even know what to do. I mean, this we're getting ruled by the classes of the useless. These people are useless. And I mean, this going back here an hour or so ago.
If only they were useless. You're talking about the people in charge. If only they were just useless. Yes. Useless would be make them relatively harmless. But they're not.
You're right. Yeah. They would be benign. You're right. I mean, just listening to those legislature, you know, I'm a legislature, and then she puts on the crying act over a ticket, where any reasonable human being would have said, you know what, I broke the law. I'm sorry, officer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They
right.
Really would have let her
but
go.
No. Yeah. It's just. But again, I'm being self-deprecating here or self-indicting. I don't even know what to do, guys. I mean, I vote. I contribute, I get out, I help with campaigns. My children at least see it, but what do you do? People, adults my age have sent their kids to these colleges knowing that this stuff is going on. Who in the hell would do that? I mean, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we start? But anyway, thank God we have folks like you for getting the message out. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the comment. Well, I mean, I think you start, you know, like Bill Nienberg started. He was one man, and of course he got felled by the mob, but he started in Downers Grove Library by agreeing to be appointed to the library board. It's not exactly a high-paying gig, although it can be in some places, but not there. And he took a stand against, you know, he was the only man. He was the Howard Rourke on the Downers Grove Library board. And some of the other trustees took a stand for him, too. Not enough, though, because they've let things get too far afield. But that's I mean, if you can't get it locally, then I don't see how you scale it. Maybe you need to find a different locality. I don't know if it's too far gone and you don't see much prospect for improvement in your lifetime and you don't want to spend your life beating your head against bags of cement. I totally understand that. I've acted in that direction, so I get it. Go or engage in activities that are productive. But you also have to take some risks, too. It's the old Whitaker Chambers story, right? I thought I was on the wrong side of history. Well, he did. He thought he was on the wrong side of history, but he defected from the Soviet Union to America anyway, and it turned out he was wrong. He was on the right side of history. But, yeah, you have to do something where you can do it. And it always seems to me that the local, where you have the most relationships and the most skin in the game, is the place to do it. But as that Jack, who used to live in Downers Grove from Northwest Indiana, said, you know, I wasn't paying it. I mean, honestly, and I appreciate it. You know, things are relatively pleasant and there's not a lot of controversy and we're living our lives and we're enjoying leafy Downers Grove and the kids go to South or North and we go to football games on Friday night and I got the job and we got our bridge club and the golf club and this and that. And so we just have our happy suburban life. And you don't think that there are pernicious forces afoot. So you pay no attention, even when they start to rear their ugly heads. And by the time you really start to pay attention and appreciate just how serious the threat is, you're where Downers Grove is today. Mark in the Western Burbs.
Yeah, hey, Dan and Amy, I was saying to your screener that I just heard a talk by Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, and he made a great point that first you displace God, you remove him from schools, you remove him from the, you know, the Ten Commandments and so forth, and then you replace God. And because there's going to be a vacuum there, whether you, you know, honor God or someone else, and that's what's happened is we've displaced God, and now we're worshiping the almighty God of self, and that's what's led to this debauchery. And it's happened slowly. You know, it's been 40 or 50 years, but that's what's led us to this point.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. It's the conversation we were having earlier in the show about pro-Islamist terrorist protesters displaying their barbarism on college campuses across America. And we played all those clips from Reagan dealing with protesters at California State University back when he was governor of California in the late 60s. Yeah, the seeds that were sown then have now borne fruit, poisonous fruit, 60 years later.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. David Walsh is a former president and CEO of Mitsubishi Hitachi Power Systems Americas. And he is sounding the alarm, as are others, with his expertise about America's electrical grid. He said in an interview with Breitbart, we've got regional grid coordinators across the grids now impacted by grid operators telling us they're running out of electricity. We're not generating enough baseload constant duty electricity to support demand. States like California already import about a third of their electricity, and they're running into problems in Southern California. He goes on to say, a massive shortage of what's called baseload constant duty electricity power plants. That's what we have. These plants that run are ones that run all day long, you know, 24/7, 365. Very high capacity factor, 92-95%, being displaced with stuff that operates, if solar, national average, 5 hours a day. Up to the north, about 4 hours a day. Wind on land is about 8 hours a day, but again, radically modifies day to day. It's about 75% variation in daily wind volume or speed for power generation. Unreliable, in other words. You've got a great shortfall there, great shortfall with solar displacing assets that run all the time, so you wind up with a systemic reduction of energy being produced by the electrical system. We've got grid operators around the country sounding alarm bells that in the next few years, they're not going to be able to meet demand with the amount of electricity being generated. Well, if we have a dearth of supply, then what will we see? Well, the only thing you could see, government rationing. Like healthcare. How's that going? For more on this and other matters economic, pleased to be joined by Christopher Whalen, investment banker, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors, author of Ford Men, From Inspiration to Enterprise, and editor for the Institutional Risk Analyst. Chris Whalen, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
This is something that is starting to get more attention, particularly as Biden's EPA advances in a more draconian direction with respect to their monomaniacal focus on carbon emissions to the detriment of, you know, powering a $25 trillion economy. And I suspect those who are substantial users of energy are well aware of the gathering storm.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see this in Europe. They've crippled their economy. because of the, you know, the headlong plunge to net zero, instead of spending their time remediating the obvious warming of the globe, they want to try and reverse it. But the truth is that human activity contributes to global warming, but the globe is warming, and there's not a lot we can do about the natural change of things. I always like to remind my friends where we grew up in Maine, the beautiful lake country, used to have a mile of ice above it 10,000 years ago. And it's going to keep warming. That's just the way it's going, and we have to adjust. That's another way to put it. The electrical stuff, though, you were just getting into, is wonderful. What a idiotic thing to do.
Well, right. I mean, but so we talk about democracy in decline, our representative Republican decline, when people say that. And a lot of the discussion has been based on, you know, lawfare, criminalizing political viewpoints, certain political viewpoints. Mm. But the representative republic also goes into decline. And it's also been discussed in terms of printing money and the debt that we're accumulating. But it also goes in decline if you can't power the economy, if you can't power the world's largest economy. And it seems that we're intent on making sure that there's no possibility of the standard of living that so many of people have come to enjoy.
Oh, yeah. No, base load electricity is kind of basic. You cannot do it with wind farms. You know, here in New York, the progressives want to erect many, many new windmills, and they will treble the cost of electricity in New York. Now, if this doesn't turn this into a Republican state, then I don't know what else to say to you.
Mm-hmm.
But New York City won't work. You cannot air condition those buildings if you're going to increase power costs like that. And then the other issue, of course, is that New York will become an importer of electricity because we don't have enough base load here. But you know what, Dan? The good news is, once we're done with this childish idiocy from the left, we're going to build a lot more nuclear reactors. That's the reality. Because when American families are sitting in the dark in California while they're being browned out every day, which is exactly what's going to happen, they will change their political orientation.
Yeah, but it's
yeah, but even if Biden's, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, we're going to need an Operation Warp Speed and then some. It takes a minute to bring a nuclear power plant online. Even these.
Oh yes, it does.
You know, right. So sitting in the dark for a generation doesn't sound too attractive.
Building a semiconductor fab. You can build a nuclear power plant faster than you can build a semiconductor fab. How about that?
Yeah, but how long are we talking?
Years, many years.
Yeah, but if Biden's still in office, he'll be like, oh, so sad, too bad.
You know what? These guys are so far over their skis, Amy, in so many areas. I'm not worried about it. The Democrats are going to crash and burn. And you see this in New York. Some of the big developers are already predicting that landlords are going to just start burning down buildings again the way they did in the 70s. And I think we're almost there. Because the unreasonable left in New York that controls Albany still think they can legislate economic outcomes and that they can legislate inflation, for example. And no, it doesn't work. And you see this in the budget numbers coming out of New York City. You just wait. You know, even if we get rid of Biden, whoever's in the White House, hopefully it'll be Trump, is going to face a big problem financially, huge. The Treasury. The cities, you know, we've got a long list of things that we're going to have to spend time on, and all internal. America, one way or another, is going to turn inward because we're not going to have any choice. That's how much stuff we've got to deal with. And electricity? Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the power grid that we rely on today was built 50 years ago, Amy, by smart people. We haven't had smart people in a while. So.
Well, it's... You know, I mean, it's the problem is you have the left's agenda and you have to sort of get back to first principles, which is, I don't know, family, faith and property, because they're all under assault by the left. And with respect to property, even some of those socialists in Albany you were speaking of recognize that because they're signing on to legislation to rein in this this squatter problem. I mean, talk about sort of the manifestations of end times. This squatter problem that actually has become more than a one-off issue in New York City.
Well, of course, they have attacked it by defining residency and excluding squatters. Okay, but still, you've got to enforce it. And in New York City, police, you know, evicting squatters, it's going to look like Operation Move in Philadelphia. Remember that one? So, you know, I think that it's good to hear people talking about this, but we're still in fantasy land mm-hmm. on real estate. They're talking about allowing landlords to recover $50,000 in renovation costs when it costs the city of New York over $300,000 to renovate public housing per apartment. They have public sector unions doing 100% lead and asbestos remediation when they don't have to. You don't disturb it. You leave it alone, right? No, no. So, you know, as long as we can still pretend that this works financially, then we will. But I don't think they'll build those windmills in New York. I don't think they'll have the money.
Well, right. Some of those projects, it was announced last week that they're non-starters, right, despite the subsidies.
It was like even the upfront subsidies don't deal with the real issue, which is once the thing is operated for a few years, you have to maintain it. You may have to take the damn turbine down off of the post. That's not a trivial thing. You know, you think clearing Baltimore Harbor with those cranes, trying to get that bridge out of the way is a big deal. Taking one of these turbines off of the post is a big deal. It's very dangerous, too. So I think there's other ways we can make power, and it's called nuclear, Dan.
Yeah.
You want to buy some stock, do your research, go buy companies that enable nuclear power. Because that's the future. The only way we're going to do it.
What's your crystal ball tell you about things economic between now and November as we are apparently, according to the numbers, in a stagflationary period in America?
Thank you. I am happy to hear you say that. It's a qualitative recession. In other words, the numbers are still okay. The inflation numbers are going back up slowly, but, you know, ask everybody if the cereal box is bigger or smaller this year versus last year. It's clearly smaller, right? It's like that wonderful Persig book, Zen in the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's about quality. So everybody knows that we're getting nibbled here and there in qualitative terms. Everybody's working harder for less. And that's the legacy of Joe Biden. If we can get the Trumpster out of the courtroom, I think they'll mop the floor with him. Because people aren't excited about another 4 years of Joe Biden. Quite the opposite. Especially here in New York. There's absolute apathy regarding all of these leaders. And if a Republican would show up who can actually make an argument and stand up in public, I think you could win this state. New York is a disaster. And I think that we just don't attack it properly. I'm tempted, as I've told you before. Mm-hmm. But I have some work to do this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of bank indexes I have to stand on.
Well, I think that steam fitter who was asked if he had a message for Joe Biden, and he said, yeah, F you. I think he's communicating something very visceral in the direction of D.C.
You know what he did the other day? He went to have dinner at Michael Douglas's house with you know, the lovely wife, and they
Catherine
closed
Zane
the
Jones,
schools in Irvington for 2 days
what?
To accommodate this gentleman's egress and ingress. I couldn't believe it. I mean, these are oligarchs. And yet Joe Biden lecture us about democracy? Oh, my God. I love those pictures of him with the sunglasses, you know. That's the perfect image of the Democratic left, authoritarian and smiling. We will help you. See, I hope that Joe does a face plant so we can have President Kamala. That'll be the end of the Democratic Party. You get a month of her on television.
Oh, boy. I couldn't stomach that.
I don't know.
I don't want to stomach that.
That laugh, you know, it's very infectious.
The undead. Come on. She's a trial lawyer. Yeah. You know how she got there. We don't have to go through the history of
No, I even know how she got there.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know how. Look, I wrote a piece for American Conservative about her. People forget it was a national mortgage settlement and the billions of dollars she took home when she was Attorney General of California. That's why we know about Kamala. Otherwise, we never would have heard of her.
Well, and I mean, it's not like she was the brainchild behind that, like the real trial lawyers and
no.
the attorney generals
no,
are,
no,
the,
no.
are the yeah. The window
oh, no.
dressing.
Oh, no, there was a gal from Texas who drove that bus. That was the Bank of America settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, she was there for California.
Yeah, right.
And they have a big slice of the mortgage market, and that's why she got such a big slice. A big slice. And she controlled all those funds, guys. Hmm. She was more important than the governor.
And
we don't even remember who that was.
Christopher Whalen, investment banker, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors, author of Ford Men.
It could only get better, guys.
Ford Men, from inspiration to enterprise and eternal optimist.
Christopher
Whalen, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a great week.
You too, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So CPD officer Luis Huesca gets laid to rest today. And as I understand it, both BLM Brandon and Jelly Belly are uninvited to his funeral.
Yeah, Susana Mendoza, whose brother is a Chicago cop, was at the wake yesterday, and she tweeted out, the family came up to her yesterday and said, please, we do not want Governor Pritzker here, and we do not want Mayor Johnson here. So, but the problem is guess who's not listening? Pritzker's listening. He's got other events today. But Mayor Johnson, when they released his schedule at 10:35 p.m. last night, said on his schedule that he will be attending the funeral of Officer Huesca.
Well, so, we'll see. If he wants a moment like Kathy Hochul had, then go ahead and go to that funeral. It's not going to be received well. But, you know, if he wants to be embarrassed and asked to leave, then perhaps that's what we'll see.
And camera crews are waiting for that moment to happen. What his police detail should be, because they are Chicago police officers, don't drive him there. Go somewhere and say, change of plans, sir. If you want to go, you're on your own. But we're respecting the family's wishes, and we're not going. We're not taking you there.
Well,
somebody's got to stand up to him.
On the issue, the underlying issue of crime, the Chicago Tribune analysis is really entertaining. I mean, you know, gallows humor, but what other kind of humor is available in Chicago? Migrant arrests are up, but they're rarely accused of violent felonies.
Oh, yeah.
40,000 asylum seekers have arrived in Chicago in less than 2 years. Tribune analysis of crime data shows the impact of migrants has been mostly felt in nonviolent offenses, particularly driving-related and thefts, and few arrests for violent felonies.
We're supposed to feel good about our new neighbors, all 40,000 of them?
Well, but you know, the whole idea that robbing people is a nonviolent offense is a canard. That is the predicate to violence, or you better be prepared for violence, and oftentimes it escalates into violence. I mean, it's like calling a prostitution a victimless crime. The Tribune goes on to say they're typically picked up for traffic infractions and thefts, and any misdeeds they're committing do not appear to have fueled a crime wave. And they even have some criminologists from William and Mary repeat the statement they made, so it gives the impression of expert opinion as opposed to mindless, politically driven perspective. It's certainly not a violent crime wave. It's an impact of people who are deprived of resources. I don't know. Some of them are getting more resources than our veterans. Anyway, later on in the story, if you can slog through it, is this nugget. The Tribune analysis has limitations beyond how often crime goes unreported. For example, Chicago police don't track arrests of asylum seekers, but rather arrestees' country of birth. Even then, that's not listed in one of seven arrests.
Why not?
Well, separating out why not for a second, then your analysis has a very large margin of error, doesn't it? And we're to then now disregard this entire analytical piece that the Tribune posted. By the way, One other just sort of point of first impression here. So we have people here illegally, and they're responsible for increases in crime. Even if you accept the premise of the Tribune's analysis, which we've just dismissed based on their own reporting about how big, essentially conceding that they have a huge standard margin of error here, this is all preventable crime. None of this crime should be happening because
they shouldn't be here.
They shouldn't be here.
And the whole thing, you know, it's mostly parking and, or I'm sorry, driving related infractions. Eventually, if you know, they're driving erratically and they're going to kill somebody. That's going to happen. And what about the Venezuelan who broke a Chicago police officer's hand when he was resisting arrest on Elston Avenue outside
of
that shelter?
Of course,
there's
incidents of violent crime, of course, and they're downplaying it. But it's all preventable crime. It's all one category. Preventable crime, crimes committed by people who shouldn't be here. But, of course, they never begin at the beginning.
And they have repeat offenders, too.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, former senior advisor for research and stats at the DOJ's Office of Legal Policy, author of books including Gun Control Myths and More Guns, Less Crime. John, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So crime is down. And migrant crime is mostly, as criminologist Graham Oosey of William & Mary said, is the impact of people deprived of resources. This whole idea that cities are, lawless places where crime and violence is run amok is just right-wing paranoia.
Right. Well, I don't think the media quite understands how crime numbers are put together. With regard to whether crime's down, there's two different types of sources we have for crime data. There's the FBI reported crime data, and that's the one that the media focuses on. And then there's the National Crime Victimization Survey data, which surveys 240,000 people each year. To ask them whether they've been victims of violent crime. And that's shown dramatic increases in crime. And there's the difference between the two is that the first measure looks at crimes reported to police, and the second measure tries to get an idea of what's happening to total crime, reported and non-reported crime. And what seems to be happening is that reported crime is falling, but total crime, particularly non-reported crime, has been soaring. Just give you an idea of how these two measures are going in opposite directions. Between 2021 and 2022, while reported violent crime fell by 2%, total crime seems to have gone up by 42% during the total violent crime. And there's several simple reasons for it, but one of the simplest ones, it's just that law enforcement in the country has collapsed. If you look at cities over a million in population, including Chicago, obviously, in the 5 years before 2020, they averaged 44% arrest rates for violent crimes, according to the FBI reported crime data. And that started falling in 2020. And by 2022, that was down to 20% of violent crimes resulted in arrests. That's a drop from 44% arrest rate down to 20%. And you have an even larger drop in property crime arrest rates that occurred there. And we can go and talk about why arrests have plummeted in those places. But give you some perspective, just last one numbers, and that is if you look at arrests as a percentage of total violent crimes, reported and unreported, it's about 8%, and arrests for total property crimes is about 1%. And just so people understand, just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're charged. I'm sure people in Chicago know what's been happening with the district attorney's office for Cook County. And just because you're charged doesn't mean you're prosecuted. And just because you're prosecuted doesn't mean you're going to be convicted. So if you're talking about, you know, whether it's 8% of violent crimes resulting in arrest or 1% of property crimes resulting in arrest, you're talking about even much smaller percentages that result in convictions and being punished.
Well, you mentioned reported crime is falling. Is that possibly because police can't wait hours? I'm sorry, victims can't wait hours for police to respond? Because we know some people here in Chicago, one woman who was carjacked, it took police an hour 42 to get to her.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's part of it. Look, it's been well known for a long time that the rate that people report crimes to police depend upon things about, you know, what happens to response time, what happens to arrest rates. If people don't think that anything's going to happen to the criminals, and maybe they've learned that from experience because they've been victims of crime before, and they just see that they go and spend the time reporting the crimes. You know, you have places in this country where people will call up and the police will say, you know, we're just not going to respond. You'll have to come into the police station yourself and fill out a report on it. But they're basically told that it's very unlikely that anything's going to happen. And so why take the time to go and do that if it's just going to accomplish nothing, if the criminals aren't going to be caught and they're not going to be punished?
Well, and again, that's just, you know, fun with numbers as you were going through when it comes to how this is spun by these defund, decarcerate politicians, including the prosecutors. So, for example, in Chicago, this is from wirepoints.org, the total number of homicides, criminal sexual assaults, robberies, and aggravated batteries year over year over the last five has increased by 25% round numbers in 2024 as compared to 2019. And it's increased and it's up over last year, too, year over year to April 21st, to the 16th week of the year. So, I mean, and so they'll focus, you know, murders are down 10% year over year. Sexual assaults are down 5%. But the total number of serious crimes is up. And, you know, that's what matters. It's not just all the murders and shootings. It's all these. It's also these other life altering criminal acts, too. And I it's one of those things where I know people don't pay that much attention to the numbers. It's more sort of what their general feeling is. And they base that feeling on anecdotal evidence. But you just wonder maybe, you know, where there's going to be a break. We were just talking to Christopher Whalen out of New York City, and he seems to think there's a possibility of a revolt in New York City, New York State. But you just don't see any paradigm shifts in any of these big cities that are controlled by the same profile of politician, both in the mayor's office and the prosecutor's offices.
Right. No, I mean, it seems like the media is basically saying, you know, don't believe your own eyes with regard to the experience, you know, because I can't tell you the number of headlines I've seen in news stories saying violent crime is down, but people don't seem to understand that. Surveys show that people think that crime is increasing. And again, there are two different types of surveys. There's surveys there that just go and talk about people's impressions. But then you have the National Crime Victimization data, which deals directly with people themselves. You only get in there if you say you've been a victim of violent crime or victim of property crime. And those numbers show a startling increase over recent years. You know, one of the tricks that the media does in terms of just talking about things like murder, is they'll go and compare the murder rates now to what they were in 2020 when they spiked up.
Right.
And they don't compare it to 2019, the last kind of, you know, normal year that we had had there. And so you have all sorts of people that say, look, in 2023, we had this huge drop in murders. But they don't tell you that it's still higher than it was in 2019. You know, you had about a 13% drop in murders in 2023, but it was still 7.4% higher than the murder rate was in 2019. And so part of it is just what year they compare it with. But you know, whether it's numbers on the economy or whether it's numbers on crime, I think for some reason the media seems to want to go and try to convince people that their own experience is somehow the outlier, that, you know, that other people aren't experiencing this huge increase in violent crime. But look, you look at these numbers that we were talking about a minute ago, and I've never seen a drop in arrests like we have seen over the last few years. I mean, to go and say that 1% of all property crimes in large cities result in arrest, 1%. 1%. Mm-hmm. And we know that the district attorneys in many of these places aren't charging even people that they do catch for property crimes. And only 8% of violent crimes result in arrest. Criminals have like nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you get free crimes with very little chance that you're going to be held responsible for it. And so is it surprising that you have this huge increase in violent crime and property crime that we've seen over the last few years in the United States? That, you know, even as I say, you look at the latest data that the National Crime Victimization data comes out for is 2022. And between 2021 and 2022, it shows a 42% increase in violent crime across the country.
Yeah. It's The Purge, you know, the movie that we talked about in the context of no cash bail in Illinois. The Purge, not just for 24 hours like the movie, it's the Purge for every day of the year. And that's what it's become in these big cities. John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, author of Gun Control Myths and More Guns, Less Crime. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks. People can find the detailed data and links to the original sources on our website at crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org.
All right. Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy and Afro Man. Remember Afro Man? So I Got High? That Afro
and
Man?
And I Got High. And then I Got High.
Yeah, he's got a 2.0 version of it out. He's putting a little political twist on it.
Well, now it's legal. Back then, it wasn't.
I thought you'd like to hear a little bit of his new riff. Pretty good. Listen closely.
Hey, yo, Hunter. Roll up another one of them congressional blunts, brother. Was gonna get his laptop fixed, but Hunter got high.
Yes.
He wasn't gonna show all them pics, but Hunter got high. He should have let Hillary bleach his whole hard drive.
What, man?
Yeah, hey, Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. He wasn't gonna mess with the hoes, but Hunter got high. He was gonna take them all out on the boat, but Hunter got high. He's the smartest man Joe ever knew in his life. Yeah, till Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. La da 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 da. He was gonna go visit his dad, but Hunter got high. He thought he had a secret stash, but Hunter got high. White House got shut down. We all know why.
Come on, man.
Yeah, hey, Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Biden never used to start with BUI. Yeah, hey, till Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high.
That's my favorite line. Biden didn't used to start with BUI. BUI. DEN as opposed to BI. That's a good line. All right. Thank you, Afro Man.
It's good. You got to see the. Are you going to tweet it out? Or you just go to their Twitter?
Yeah, I'll tweet it out.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning. Dan and Amy, I want to get to Jerry Seinfeld's comments on situational comedies. You know, he knows something about sitcoms.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. But first, we have an important message from Ron on the South Side. Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Amy and Dan. Dan just had to call you and wish you a happy birthday. Yay. You are simply the best.
Yes.
And
thank you.
Next time I talk to you all, I'll be calling you all from a hammock with a nice cigar and a bourbon coffee drink. So I'll talk to you all then.
Wait. Yeah, when are you moving to Hammond?
No,
I'm going to Belize Friday.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to
Amy.
Hammond to have a tropical drink and a cigar.
Yeah. Speaking of being a comedian, that was good, Amy. But
yeah,
then,
if only it was intentional.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was planned.
Hey, but thank you so much. Thank you for producer for putting me up. But all the best to you, Dan.
Thank you, Ron. Enjoy Belize. Have a great time. His
I'm
son's getting married
yeah.
in Belize, destination wedding
gonna
we heard about.
Dive the blue hole. Well, happy birthday, 52 years old. You're playing with a full deck now.
Uh-huh.
And how are you going to celebrate your big day? I feel bad because people are texting me wondering where you're going to go to dinner tonight, and they want to hang out with you.
I've told you I'm going to be in Illinois State Board of Elections prison today. I may or may not make it past the day of my 52nd the 52nd year of my
Did they
birth.
Plan this, though, so that it would be on your birthday? Because how you wouldn't want to do this for your birthday.
I don't care. You have to deal with this specious lawfare from fraudsters like Mark Elias representing fraudsters like Jelly Belly Pritzker, for the crime of
having an opposing voice or
well,
yeah, a candidate.
Yeah, you're not
or?
You're and you're and for, you know, putting him, even if Darren Bailey didn't make the race particularly close, we put Jelly Belly through the ringer on matters like we were just talking about with John Lott, the Safety Act, the Pritzker Purge Law. And a host of other issues, and they don't like it. They don't like it. They don't like to be challenged. There's no need to challenge them. They are our betters, and things are going swimmingly, and how dare you, and so forth. Mm. So anyway, that's how it is. That's fine. I can carry the weight. No big deal. Seinfeld.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to get to this, because Seinfeld's becoming more outspoken about this censorious culture that is being promulgated by the left, and good. We need Jerry's voice and a lot of other voices along with them. Hopefully, he'll encourage others to step forward as well. This was Seinfeld on the New Yorker Radio Hour talking about the death of sitcoms in particular, not the death of comedy writ large, because you still have stand-up. So it's an important comment he makes, and here it is.
It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to see stand-up comics because we are not policed by anyone. The audience polices us. We know when we're off track.
Mm-hmm.
We know instantly, and we adjust to it instantly. But when you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy.
Have you had that experience?
No.
Because isn't that what Curb is all about?
Yeah. Larry was grandfathered in. He's old enough that I don't have to observe those rules because I started before you made those rules.
It's really good. And the question that he posed, I was thinking about it, and I don't really have an answer. You used to go home, watch Mary Tyler Moore Show, All in the Family, Cheers. So where is it now? What do you go home and you're ready to watch on a Wednesday or Thursday night now? What are the networks offering? Even the streaming services, what sitcoms are they offering that, you know, fit that those lofty standards of those seminal sitcoms from previous generations? I can't name one. Can you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. And I consume a lot of movies and television series and so forth. I mean, think about it. And all of these sitcoms, whether they could be made today. I just had this conversation actually on the podcast I do for American Greatness, Counterculture, with Rob Long, who we've had on the show before. He's co-founder of Ricochet. And he was a writer and producer on Cheers, speaking of Cheers. And so we talked about, you know, could Cheers be made today and made in the same way? And of course the answer is no. You couldn't have.
What was offensive about Cheers?
Because Sam Malone was a woman, you know, quote unquote womanizer. It was misogynistic and so forth.
It was fun. That's when men were men.
Stereotypical roles. But it was an interesting comment that Rob Long made in our discussion about that, too. He says that the audience is so fragmented, and you hear Hollywood, oh, the audience is so fragmented and so forth because there's so many more outlets. Yeah, but his point was it's fragmented because you're fragmenting it. It's fragmented because you're pushing this political pap masquerading as art, and a lot of people aren't interested. There's nothing that is unifying or interesting the way and prompts discussion. And did you see this? And remember that episode, like the great sitcoms of that Jerry Seinfeld just rattled off and others you can add to the list as well. Because, you know, those were reflective of the debates going on in the country. They put a good spin on it, made people laugh at themselves. You couldn't say the stuff that you know, Red Fox said in Sanford It's On, or Archie Bunker said in All in the Family, of course. But remember, you know, the great ironic thing is that these sitcoms were all the work product, those specific ones, of a guy who founded People for the American Way. He was basically almost a communist, Norman Lear, right? But Norman Lear, a dyed-in-the-wool man of the left, couldn't do what he did that way. And of course, he had a commentary. Archie Bunker was not the hero in the story. It's like sort of Sam Malone is not the hero in the story, but they're complicated figures that have faults, and their faults get exposed, and that dynamic is part of the fun. It's not like a Norman Lear was promoting the Archie Bunker worldview when it came to diversity, to use the word of today. But it's really true. I hadn't thought about it the way that Seinfeld said it until he said it, which is, tell me what the sitcom is in at present that fits the bill of Seinfeld, Cheers, All in the Family, these great sitcoms of previous generations, going all the way back to the advent of television. Every generation had one. Does this one?
No, I mean Blackish, and that's horrible to watch. That's diverse reasons.
But the whole point is that's an and I haven't watched it, but that's an example of what Rob Long is saying. Oh, if the audience is fragmented, you're fragmenting it. You're not doing anything that has broad appeal because you're too interested in advancing a political flag. You do something that has enough texture, enough layering that has broad appeal, and you'll get a broad audience if you do it well. Nick, Northwest Side.
Yeah, thank you. And hello, Dan and Amy. I was telling a screener that all these stations that you mentioned, they're all on the air with my free TV, the one I get over the air with my little antenna. They're all there, and maybe a few more, some old shows from decades ago. So that are funny shows still, you know, so they're still around. You just got to, you know, maybe get a separate little TV and just get a over-the-air antenna and pick up all these points, you know, like 11.1, 0.2, 0.3, you know, all these different stations.
Well, yeah, I know, but yeah, right. You can go on Amazon and watch reruns of Frasier and Cheers and All in the Family and Sanford and Son, so forth. But the question is, what is being produced today? And what is even possible to produce today, given the, you know, monoculture in Hollywood? Paul, New Lenox.
Hi, guys. Yeah,
you're not going to replace Sally and Buddy from Mary Tyler Moore, but a program I picked up on a couple of years ago was Resident Alien. I don't know if you caught it, but it's kind of a cross between Green Acres and Everybody Loves Raymond, but it's pretty funny. That's the only thing I look forward to on a Wednesday night. Have a great day.
Oh, thanks for the call. Wait, is Resident Alien, is that the one with...
Resident Alien?
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but... is that current? I guess it is current. I don't know, but I mean
2021 sci-fi, 3 seasons in.
Yeah. Sci-fi. Not sitcom. Maybe it's a sitcom with a sci-fi sensibility. Matt, Southside.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I think that my opinion was the Roseanne reboot. I think that one was kind of topical, and I think that, you know, they did their best to make it funny, of course, once they got rid of her, you know, a lot of that changed. But I think that was relevant when it first came back, and I think that's why the ratings were so high when it first came back on the air.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Greg, Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy birthday, Dan.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I think one of the biggest jokes we got going now is you had Al Bundy, who is one of the classic, comedies in all time. Now the father on Modern Family, which is, it couldn't get any gayer than that.
You know, actually, Modern Family was pretty good early.
I love Modern Family.
It was pretty good early, but then it sort of drifted into the political because that's where things were being pushed, too political. But it was pretty sharp. The writing was pretty crisp. But it did fade after a couple of seasons, at least for me. But I mean, but think about it. But even still, that's a decade old.
Right.
So what's being made now?
Nothing that I know of.
Nate and Culver, this is a good show. Go ahead, Nate. Culver, Indiana.
Hey, good morning, guys. The only one I can think that pushes any borders is Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's a good show.
I mean, the first episode of the show is called The Gang Gets Racist. I mean, but everyone loves it.
Thanks for the call. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is really good. It's really good. And again, that had to be 15 years ago. It started. I know it's had a long run. And I think Seinfeld was more sort of in the moment saying, today, because 15 years ago is like
a lifetime ago.
Somebody who was it? I saw somebody online say that like 2009 to 2024 is like 1955 to 1970.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's right. I think that's how massive the culture has shifted in that 15 year period. So right. So if it was today that you were launching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, could it get launched? Could it get by those committees that Seinfeld was talking about?
Hey, I have a little bit of breaking news. We're just learning Mayor Johnson is not going to attend the funeral of Chicago police officer Luis Huesca. We continue to send our deepest condolences to the family and colleagues.
Yeah, he doesn't. Of course, he doesn't want that moment.
He will not be attending.
Renee in Barrington.
Yes. Hey, Dan. You know, you could probably think this through better than me, but I think one of the problems is that it seems like there's a pervasiveness of concrete thinking, very simplistic Neanderthal type thinking, you know, racism bad, diversity good. I'm not sure that people could pick up the nuances of a Archie Bunker today.
Right. Yeah. Right. And they're not even trying. There's no such thing as nuance. Everything has to be, you know, on the nose and then beaten into your nose. That's how it is, which is why it's all so schlocky, and which is why you have the fragmented audience, which is to say small little audiences around small little shows. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.